Okay. All right, folks, welcome. Glad you are with us. Sorry it's a little hectic here. We just finished up here at CPAC. I literally, 60 seconds ago, finished up interviewing Carrie Lake. She's running for governor of Arizona, and she was here at our booth. Now, we don't endorse candidates here on this network or anything, but we do interview candidates about public policy. That's what we had Carrie Lake on about, was to interview her on public policy. Go ahead and have a seat, guys. The guys from Gun Owners of America are going to join me here. You know, I have those guys on quite a bit, so we have some of those folks here at CPAC to interview today. But back to Carrie Lake, just got a chance to interview her. Her race was finally official last night after some what looked like some shenanigans going on related to her race. But now it looks like, again, as of last night, she is the gubernatorial candidate. And we talked about public policy issues, our border, the national security issue of our border. We talked about voter fraud. We talked about education, critical race theory, all these things they're trying to push. And Katie Hobbs is running for governor on the Democrat side. And, of course, again, we don't endorse candidates here on this network, but we would gladly interview Katie Hobbs about public policy issues. So if Katie Hobbs' people want to reach out, I'd gladly put questions to her the way I just did Carrie Lake. So anyway, we're scrambling at the last minute because it was a interview we knew was coming but didn't know when it was coming. And she spoke on the stage at CPAC and then was on another outlet and then made her way here. And so it was cutting up right next to airtime. But we miraculously, thanks to the Lord's provision, we pulled it off. And we are now here live on VCY Americas. And there are 60 blowtorch stations across America as we're live at CPAC. We were able to put a lot of great interviews out last night. Many of them are at WVWTV.com, WVWTV.com. We'll have more today, this afternoon, and all day tomorrow here in Dallas. Well, joining me at the news desk here at CPAC now are two gentlemen, Stephen Wilford with Gun Owners of America. It makes it real convenient you guys are wearing shirts with your name on it, but you don't have a shirt with a name on it. Tell us your name. Wes Friedel. All right. You guys are with Gun Owners of America. We might need to get something to stack his mic on to raise his mic up a little bit. He's got a shorter mic here. But I interview Mike Hammond a lot with Gun Owners of America. You guys know Mike? You know Mike, right? Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America. He's your attorney legislative guy. We interview him all the time.
Yes.
We interview him all the time. So, okay, one of you here is a national figure, big time. Which one is it?
Because I'm the national spokesperson for GOA.
You're the national spokesperson for Gun Owners of America. Now, one of you was the one that bravely, without I think even any shoes on.
That would be me. They call me the barefoot defender.
Now, I apologize for not knowing who's who, but that's the way it is here at CPAC. We're broadcasting nonstop. People come to us. So one of your public relations persons came over and said, would you like to interview some of the guys from Gun Owners of America? So, hey, we interview Mike Hammond of Gun Owners of America all the time, of course. And they said, well, one of them, you'll know his story. And as soon as, of course, they told us, we knew exactly who it was. So, but I didn't know which one of you it was because we're all just meeting for the first time. So our whole audience is going to know who you are. Maybe they don't remember the name. It's Stephen Wilford, but they're all going to know your story. We're on 60 Christian stations around the country right now, VCY America. The network's been around for over 60 years. Our audience is filled with God and country folks, people who love our freedoms, our First Amendment, to proclaim the truth of the gospel, to proclaim the truth of parental authority. We love our Second Amendment, which helps protect our First Amendment. So I know much of our audience is going to be really pleased that we have you at the news desk today. But yet many of them, to this moment, don't know who you are. But as soon as you start telling your story, they'll know you. Tell our audience what happened in Texas and how God used you, I think, to save some lives.
So on November 5th, 2017, a madman came into First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas, and started shooting through the walls and windows of a 100-year-old church that has very thin walls. And he walked all the way around the church, shooting through the church.
And he was using what?
He was using an AR-15. And he had multiple loaded guns. He had on Class 3 body armor, a ballistic bulletproof helmet. My daughter made me aware of what was going on.
You have a house right down the street.
I do. From the church. I was hanging out in my bedroom, checking my messages and stuff. And my daughter made me aware of the shooting. And I ran to my safe. I grabbed an AR-15. People say, you didn't take time to put shoes on. I heard so many shots and knew that they were direct it to someone I cared about deeply.
Because you, this is a small town.
We are under 600 total population in Sutherland
Springs. So you knew most of the people in that church service.
I'm fourth generation in Sutherland Springs.
So you knew most of those people.
I knew most everybody in the church. I ran across the street barefoot. They said, you didn't take time to put your shoes on. I always tell people, you're lucky I had pants on. So I was able to confront him. We had a shootout. He shot the truck in front of me. He hit the windshield of the car behind me, hit the house behind me.
So he was firing at you.
He was firing
at me. You guys were having a shootout.
It was an actual shootout. I ran behind a truck to use for cover because I didn't have any body armor like he did.
He had full body armor on.
He had full body armor and a ballistic helmet.
And a ballistic helmet.
Yes, yes. It was actually my worst nightmare.
At this point, did you think I'm not getting out of this alive?
You know, I didn't have time to think about anything like that. I think I was focused on what was going on. And you talk about religious freedom. I'm a Christian, and I believe that God was orchestrating the whole thing. And I believe that God was swatting those bullets away from me and taking care of me and steadying my hand. Man out here just asked me, he said, were you scared? And I said, no, I was flat terrified. But I stayed calm, and the only way I can tell you that I did is because I believe the Holy Spirit was covering me and watching over me.
Kind of reminds me of the story that we hear about George Washington, and they're shooting at him, and you know, the bulletproof George Washington. I don't know if you know the story or not.
Right,
and then later the
horse.
The Indians are like, you know, something was going on that was of a supernatural nature, because you should have been shot off that horse multiple times. So it sounds almost like a modern-day George Washington situation.
I truly believe that God was watching over me and held my hand, and I hit him three times.
So you hit him three times, but he's wearing body armor.
I hit him three times in the body armor, and then when he ran for his vehicle, he turned to his side, exposed his side. I put one in his side, one in his legs. He got in his vehicle. He put two more shots through the side window of his vehicle. I put one where I perceived his head to be. I couldn't see it from reflection from the glass, but the coroner's report said it broke across his forehead.
Say that one more time.
It broke across his forehead, right underneath the rim of the helmet, and split his forehead open. He accelerated and ran as fast as he could.
So you were just kind of guessing where his head might be.
At that point, because I couldn't see it from the reflection from the sun.
But you did get a headshot.
I did get a headshot, but it wasn't a fatal headshot. It just busted the skin across his forehead. And he accelerated, turned the corner. By the time I got in the middle of the street, he was fleeing as fast as he could. He was 150 yards away. And I put one through the back windshield. It busted the back windshield, went through the driver's side seat, and hit him right at the left shoulder blade. He topped the hill. I flagged down a truck, Johnny Langendorf. I'd never met Johnny before in my life. I got in the truck with Johnny, and we chased him 11.6 miles, and he committed suicide.
Okay, so this guy, this is amazing. So let's go back to that. You flagged on the truck, but the guy didn't know you. How did he know you weren't a bad guy?
Well, he had just witnessed the whole shooting.
Well, he did too, huh?
And he witnessed the shooting. And when I tapped on his window and said, that guy just shot up the Baptist church and we have to stop him, every sane man in this world would have just stomped on the gas and left me at the stop sign. But this is Texas we're talking about. We're not necessarily known for our sanity.
So you chased him 11 miles.
We did.
What did your speeds get up to?
Johnny said over 95 miles per hour. I'm going to tell you, well over 95 miles per hour.
And you're chasing him through rural roads?
Yeah, but we're still splitting traffic, passing cars. And
at this point, we haven't hearing any ambulances, any police?
No.
You're still all on your own?
No.
And how long did this last? What's the time frame? How long did this go on for?
Oh, along with the chase, probably over 10 minutes.
Over 10 minutes, and you still haven't heard one siren?
And then after he crashed and committed suicide, I still waited. They believe that they estimate between 5 and 7 minutes before the police finally got there after the crash scene.
So you were without police for 15 to 20 minutes. For 20 minutes, still no police. It took 20 minutes at least.
So they have a recording at the Valero of the first 911 call. And the first 911 call, the lady called, they have her on video, and it took 19 minutes before the police got there. Now, I say that, and I'm not dissing the police at all. Wilson County and the Sheriff's Department and Lavernia Police
Department.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying it either to diss the police. What I'm saying is it just shows the police usually get there in time to take a report.
We have to be able
to defend ourselves.
All of them were coming as fast as they could.
Right.
But everybody needs to know and understand that you're your own first
responder.
That's
right. That's right.
Police are second responders, and I don't mean that in any disrespect, because they're coming to save your life. They're coming, and they don't even know who you are.
Right.
And they're ready to risk their life. And I don't want to disrespect police in any way. But Chris Bird wrote a book, and in the subtitle of the book, it says, "When seconds count, police are only minutes away." And that's no more true than when you're in an incident like this. You have to be able to respond yourself.
So when the police showed up, a sheriff, I guess, police or sheriff, or both?
Oh, yeah, we had five different law enforcement office departments.
Showed up. So when they come up on the scene, they don't know what they're coming up on. So tell me how this plays out.
Well, so I was holding my rifle over the hood of a truck. And
pointing at his car?
Pointing at his vehicle. I didn't know he had
committed suicide.
I didn't have any clue. I didn't hear the shot. But I'm holding my rifle over the hood of the truck, and it took 5 to 7 minutes, which is an eternity. And finally, out of the left, I hear, "Driver, get out of the vehicle with your hands up." And I turned up and looked up to my left, and I could see the police cruiser up there. An officer standing there with his pistol in his right hand, a microphone in his left. He keyed the microphone again. And he said it again, "Driver, get out of the vehicle with your hands up." Now, I'm going to tell all your people in your audience that if you're ever in this kind of situation and the police show up, that officer wants to go home to his family.
Yeah.
He may not know who you are. You better comply or get shot. And so I laid the rifle on the hood of the truck, and I started coming back to the back of the truck with my hands up. And he keyed the mic and looked at me and made eye contact. He said, "Not you." And he wanted me to know that he wasn't done with me yet. And
he was wanting you to help him, because you've got an AR-15 straddled across your hood outside your truck.
Yes.
He's got a pistol.
Yes.
So he didn't want to be, apparently he didn't want you walking away from your AR-15 yet. He may need your help.
He knew who I was, because Johnny was talking to dispatch. So this officer apparently knew who I was and knew I was, but I didn't know that. And when he made sure that I knew that, he showed me more respect at that moment than I expected.
Wow.
And I held that rifle up again for another 5 to 7 minutes. More officers showed up. And this time they were getting AR-15s out of their cars.
Okay, hold right there. We don't want you to miss anything. We'll be right back after this break, folks. Don't go away. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back, guys. Glad you are with us. We got our network in Milwaukee, Justin at the controls. Justin, thank you for all your help here. They're queuing us, and we don't have everything quite as there's a time delay is what I'm trying to tell you between here in Dallas and Milwaukee. because we're not on our normal fiber and whatnot. So anyway, we're trying to cue everything and make it right. So thanks to Justin and everybody, team and VCY for the flexibility. Again, this is another perfect example, and we haven't forgotten about you here.
This is another
perfect example of why we come to CPAC, folks. We get interviews with people. We get to meet people that we otherwise would never meet, never get to talk to. And then there's something about looking them in the eye and hearing them tell the story right to your face as well. And that is the case right now with Stephen Welford, who is the national spokesperson for Gun Owners of America. We've known Larry Pratt for years and years. Now we know his son. And of course, we work a lot with Mike Hammond, who's their legislative attorney that comes on here regularly to explain laws and legislation. But it's our first time to meet Stephen Welford. Many of you know his story because in Texas several years ago, at that time, Stephen, wasn't that the largest mass church shooting in American history?
It still is, as far as I know.
How many were murdered?
26 people lost their life that day, and 20 more were injured.
How are the injured doing today?
Varying. They're doing well for the most part, yes.
You see them regularly, right?
I do see them regularly. They're my community, and I love them all.
Well, let's finish the story here, and then I want to hear more about the community and the church and what's going on since then and why you've gotten involved with Gun Owners of America. But let's finish the story. So is this a sheriff deputy or a police officer we're talking about?
Actually, it was a deputy.
Okay, so yes. A sheriff deputy. He's telling the driver, get out with your hands up. You thought he was talking to you, so you put down you left your gun on the hood and backed up?
I left my gun on the hood and started walking actually toward him with the hands
up. Yeah, and he said, I'm not talking to you.
He said, not talking to you.
So at that point, did you go back to your gun?
I did. I went back, picked up my rifle, and put it back over the hood. I was about 50 yards.
At this point, you're also giving him cover.
I was. I was about 50 yards from the vehicle. I had an AR-15.
And he's 100 yards, right?
And he was 100 yards away with a pistol.
Yeah.
And so we waited another 5 minutes or so before other officers showed up. They started getting out AR-15s out of the trunks of their cars, and I thought, okay, now I am done, and I pulled the rifle off the hood, and I laid it on the toolbox, and now I'm trying to, most of the rest of the country doesn't get it. Texans get it. On November 5th, 2017, that day was 90 degrees, and my feet are starting to cook on the pavement. And so I'm trying to hang on to the back of Johnny's truck and keep my feet in the shade. And that lasted another 30 to 45 minutes.
Oh, my.
I decided that I would run back to the police line. I still didn't know what they were doing. They were waiting on a drone to be able to fly over there and look inside the vehicle to see if there was a threat anymore. And when they were able to do that, they realized the shooter had taken his own life. And even then, they approached the vehicle real slowly to make sure that there were no booby traps or anything.
Any explosives or anything.
I'm going to tell you that there's so many heroes that were inside the church. Gunny Macias, nobody seems to know Gunny's name. He's just Gunny. He's a retired Marine. He got shot 5 times in the abdomen. He couldn't even stand. And he was barking orders, telling people what they needed to do to save their lives. Julie Workman.
Is he alive today?
Yes, he's alive. Gunny's alive. You can come see him at First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs and meet the man and the legend. Because he barked at Julie Workman and told her she needed to be about her business. That she was an emergency room nurse and she needed to save lives. Julie had been shot through the breast, and one skipped off of the concrete into her leg. She was bleeding.
She shot 2 times.
She was bleeding from her own wounds.
But she was treating people.
And she got up and started tying tourniquets.
Good grief.
And then a little girl was scared, and so Gunny Macias started singing Jesus Loves Me with her.
Zach, shot 5 times, but he's singing Jesus Loves Me to this little girl.
Zach Poston was shot 7 times. Zach Poston was a senior in high school, 17 years old. He was signed up to be a Marine himself. And he got shot 7 times, but before he got shot, what drew the attention is he kicked a little girl underneath a pew to save her life, which brought all the focus of the shooter onto him, and he got shot 7 times, and Zach Poston's grandmother crawled on top of him and sacrificed her own life
to save
Zach.
Wait a minute now. So Zach got shot 7 times, and at some point he goes down, and his grandmother climbed on top of him
and sacrificed her life and saved Zach.
I don't know that I've heard these stories.
Everybody should have heard this story.
Were they have? Is it my just not tuning into the right shows or news, or are these stories that have not really been told?
Most of the media
on a national level.
Most of the media wants it to go away because we don't fit the narrative.
And the narrative is a guy with an AR-47 confronted a guy with an AR-47, and the good guy won.
AR-15s, yes.
AR-15,
and the good guy won. And that doesn't fit the narrative that I used an AR-15 to defend my community.
Yeah.
And that's not the narrative.
And Biden wants to get rid of these guns.
Oh, absolutely.
And how would it have gone for you that day if all you were left with was, let's say, a pistol that... Because they're wanting a legislation with a pistol that has 10 rounds, right? And, of course, then they're going to move it down to 5 and then 3. But let's say you had a pistol with 10 rounds. How would that have gone for you that day?
Probably not well, because he had on Class 3 body armor. It probably would have not gone well. But I used my own AR-15. He came out of the church shooting at me with a pistol. He had been shooting with an AR-15. He dropped that in the church. He came out shooting at me with a pistol. And I don't know how many shots that he flung at me, but I fired 6 rounds. Every one of them hit the target. Not all of them were effective because of body armor.
But you're going to count for every one of your shots.
I can.
What would your clip hold? 30, 31?
A regular magazine holds...
I said clip. I'm going to get criticism. Magazine.
That's okay.
It won't hold it against you.
Thank you.
Regular magazine holds 30 rounds, but I didn't even have one loaded. I had to grab a handful of ammunition. I had 8 rounds.
Are you telling me that you had to go ahead and load your magazine while you're on the run?
As I was running, I was dropping rounds in a magazine running across the street.
And you only had 8 rounds?
I had 8 rounds. I had 2 left.
Oh, my.
I fired 6 times, and I hit him 6 out of 6, and I had 2 rounds left.
Let's go back to the church. So how is the young man that took 7 shots?
He walked across the stage.
Say his name again, please.
Zach Poston. And Zach Poston walked across the stage and graduated with his class. And this was in November. He graduated with his class. Chris Workman was shot in the back. Chris Workman was the praise ministry leader of the church. Still is, by the way. He was shot in the back, and he was paralyzed from the waist down. And the shooter was just about to shoot Chris when I yelled out, and the guy came out and faced me.
Okay, so you're saying that you're yelling from outside stopped him?
Yes.
Because what did you yell at him? Can you repeat it on radio?
You ready for something deep and philosophical?
Yeah, as long as it's not cursing, yeah.
I yelled, hey.
Hey, oh, really?
I did. I truly believe, and this is me, and this is the Christian me, and what I know. I truly believe there was a spiritual battle between good and evil. And that I believe that the Holy Spirit called out a demon that was within him. So what human ears heard and what the demon heard were different things. Because he was standing over Chris, about to shoot Chris in the face. And Chris said he just knew that he was going to go meet Jesus. And he was looking down at the barrel of the pistol. And when Chris heard me yell, he stopped what he was doing. He dropped his rifle in the church and came out shooting at me with a pistol.
Did he drop his rifle because he was out of rounds?
I don't know. They never said.
They never said. So when you said, hey, from outside, you yelled it.
He stopped what he had his pistol pointing at Chris.
And came out sure to engage you.
And he dropped the rifle and came out and started shooting at me with his pistol.
The nurse, is she back to practicing or is she retired?
Oh, absolutely.
She went back to work.
Yeah, she's still working.
What do you do for a living? Or what did you do at the time? I know what you do now. You're national spokesperson for Gun Owners America. What did you do at the time?
I was a maintenance plumber for University Hospital, which is one of only 2 level 1 trauma centers in San Antonio.
This is where a lot of these patients went.
And really, really interesting, you know, because that day they were having an active shooter drill at that hospital. And the nurses and doctors were saying, why today are we having...
Why on a Sunday?
Why on a Sunday? That's what they were saying. We could be worshiping at our church with our families, and you're having an active shooter drill today on a Sunday. And then the real shooting came over. Since they were all hands on deck, they were able to get all 20 ORs up and running. And not one patient that made it to University Hospital
died.
And that was the hospital that I was working for. I was never more proud to be working for University Hospital in San Antonio in my life.
Wow. So what is going on with the church now? We all saw the pictures. The church all shot up. They ended up doing what with that building?
They're going to tear that building down.
Still not torn down?
It is not yet.
So please. When you walk by, you see all the bullet holes and everything still?
Well, they patched all the bullet holes and made it into a memorial.
Okay.
You can see where the bullet holes have been patched.
Are they going to leave it as a memorial?
What they're going to do, they're going to tear it down because the building's in so bad repair. And was before the shooting. It was in very poor repair. And the North American missions built them a new $3 million facility. And it's great. It's beautiful. It's
who built that for them?
North American Missions.
Okay.
And
are they in that now?
I'm sorry?
They're in the building now? The new
oh,
building?
Yes.
Okay.
And so this is a case where Satan meant something for evil. And he truly meant something for evil. And God has turned it around. People need to understand that there were 49 people in that church on that Sunday morning. And now, even during the worst of COVID, we're averaging 200 people.
Wow.
There were 49 people, 26 died, 20 more were injured, and now we're at 200 every Sunday. And we outreach around the world through live broadcasting to South America and then even in Africa. They listen to our services.
Wow.
Around the world.
And that day, the church was live streaming, right?
Yeah, no.
They were not?
No, they were recording, but they weren't live streaming.
Okay, so tell me about the recording. What were they recording for later, posting for it later?
They always
okay.
did.
So what happened to that recording?
The police have it.
Have you seen it?
They have offered to let people see it. No one has chose to see it.
No one in that group has chosen to see
it? No one has chose to see it. I don't think I could handle seeing what actually happened inside that church. The absolute evil that went on in there.
The reason I ask is, are there things that churches can learn, obviously, from this?
Oh, I think there's things that churches all over. Jack Wilson at West Freeway Church of Christ.
That's the guy that stood up and took that shot across the auditorium.
Within 6 seconds, he took out a shooter. Jack Wilson started his safety response team, he started it a month and a half after Sutherland Springs happened. Because of what happened to Sutherland Springs,
wow.
He started that and was able, because of Sutherland Springs, I believe, to stop that shooter before it went too far.
Wow. Okay, hold right there. I want you to miss any of it. My bumper started. Bumper music started. We're on the VCY America Radio Network, 60 stations nationwide. We're also here at CPAC. We'll be right back after this break. All right. All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. Gun Owners of America national spokesperson Stephen Wilford joins us. And we're going to talk here in just a second with Wesley Friedel. He is the state director of Gun Owners of America for the
yes,
state
sir.
Of Texas, correct,
yes,
Wesley?
Sir. Yes, sir, that's correct.
All right. So let's finish your story up. So you're saying that because of what happened in your community, other churches were watching in the church that, what was it, Freeway?
West Freeway Church of Christ.
That guy started spinning up basically a security team, right?
He did. He created the safety response team is what we call it.
And that gentleman, he had practiced a lot. And I watched that video and I went on the air and I said, that guy has shot a lot of rounds. His stance, the way he pulled his weapon, his stance, and of course not to mention his shot, his accuracy from across the auditorium. But you could tell by the way he pulled his weapon and his stance, I'm like, this guy's highly trained. Turned out he was actually an instructor, if I remember correctly.
We were both instructors. You know,
you're an instructor?
Oh, I was a competitor and instructor.
Really?
Yes.
So before what happened, when was the last time you had practiced?
Well, I had my own shooting range on my property.
So you practiced quite a bit?
Weekly.
So yes. You shot your AR-15 regularly?
I built my AR-15 for competition.
And so you shot weekly?
I did.
And you had six rounds, and you all landed, every one of them hit the target?
I had eight rounds. I fired six of them, and all six hit the target.
So tell me what your life has been like after this. I mean, what happens once this goes? They bring you in, and they debrief you, or they just, like, take your name and number and say, good job, and we'll call you if we need you? What happened?
Yeah, pretty much. So while I was down there at the crash scene, they kept me down there for 4.5 hours.
They get you some shoes?
You know, that was a really funny story because I could see my wife 200 yards away. They had put up a roadblock 200 yards away. And by the time I got back to the police line, they set me on a guardrail. And I was waiting, and an officer walked by, and I said, excuse me, can I call my wife? He said, yeah, go ahead. And he kept walking. I said, no, can I use your phone? I don't have a phone. He said, you don't have your phone? And I looked down, and I said, I got no shoes on. Oh, yeah, you can use my phone. And he hands the phone, and I call my wife, and I said, I could see her car up there at the roadblock. And I said, I need shoes. And she said, well, they won't let me down there. And I said, is there any way? And she said, they won't let me down there. And she said, I just have my Crocs. And I said, well, you know, my feet would stick off the end of her Crocs. I looked at the officer and I said, can I go back to my wife's car and get some shoes? And he said, no, you need to stay here. I said, but my feet are hot. Opens up the back of his police cruiser and said, you can sit in the back of my cruiser. I'm like, no, I'm good. My feet aren't that hot.
No, exactly.
I did not want to sit in the back of that police, because when they shut the door on
those
locked. Things,
you're
they don't open from the inside.
That's right, that's exactly
and
right.
And I truly believed, and this ought to be a witness test for someone that might pull their gun, if the situation is not so serious that you think you'll probably go to jail, you probably should keep your gun holstered. The situation, if it comes down to where you think you need to pull your gun, you may go to jail. And that might be a witness test. If it's not that serious that you are willing to go to jail for, you probably ought to keep it holstered.
Wow.
But that day, it was worth me going to jail, the consequences of me doing nothing. And so I thought I was going to jail. But it didn't work out that way.
You really thought you were going to go to jail after you just stopped a guy from murdering the remaining people in that building? You thought you were going to jail?
Well,
and in the state of Texas.
Well,
and if you've been in New York, yeah, obviously.
All seriousness, because Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman had just happened.
Oh, yeah.
And they released George Zimmerman, okay? And then they got caught a whole lot of flack for doing that.
Yep.
So the kickback for that was fresh in my mind, and I thought that I would probably go to jail, and I figured it would probably all work out in the end. When everything got sorted out, I thought it would be okay, but I figured I was going to jail. But when they finally released me and I'm taking that 200 yard
How late in the day was it they finally released you?
Well, it happened at 12:15 in the mornings when it all started. I was down there at the crash scene for 4.5 hours. So anyway, I'm walking back to my wife's car, and a very pleasant looking lady about my age came up behind me and said, "Mr. Williford, I need to talk to you." And I turned around and tears were streaming down her face. And she said, "I had friends in that church." And I said, "How bad is it?"
And she said, "You didn't even know at this point."
I didn't know anything at this point. She said, "It's really bad." But she said, "I stopped you because if you need help at all, please call me." And she handed me her card. She said, "I'm the DA of Wilson County."
She's the district attorney.
She was there at the scene, and she offered her assistance. And that's when I realized I probably wasn't going to jail.
She was in your corner, man.
I figured I probably wasn't going to jail at that point.
Wow. And what is your life? I mean, your life after that? You're getting phone calls from, I guess, the governor and all kinds of folks, right?
The
media was, I'm sure, calling you?
I got to meet Donald Trump twice.
Really?
Yes. I got to go to the State of the Union address.
So he recognized you from his... Did he recognize you during his speech?
He called me out to do a speech. He called me out on stage to do a speech.
And then at the State of the Union, did he just recognize you?
No, at the State of the Union, he did not.
But you were there in the balcony?
But I was there in the balcony.
Mm-hmm. Next to the First Lady, I'm assuming, or close by in her balcony?
No, I was brought there by my congressman.
Okay.
My Democratic congressman.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. Wow. All right, let's turn our attention to Wesley Verdell.
Sir.
You're the state director for Gun Owners of America for Texas.
Yes, sir.
Yep. So how has this incident gone down in Texas as far as helping to secure more Second Amendment rights? And what are churches doing? Are your people calling you and saying, "Hey, come train our team, help us spin up a safety team"? What's going on since this?
Yeah, so our main focus has been on legislative session. Can I pull that off? There we go.
Yeah, you can do
all
that.
Right, thanks a lot. So our main focus has been on legislative issues. GOA in 2015, we didn't have open carry in Texas in 2015 or before that. GOA and some other gun organizations. We ended up putting enough activists and pressure on the legislators. We got that passed. Then we worked on constitutional carry, and through activism and political pressure, because a lot of people love to campaign that they're pro-gun and they send you out all the material that they're pro-gun, but that's not always the case with legislators. And so GOA's focus has been making sure that those people adhere to their campaign promises. And in last session, 2021, we got constitutional carry passed. So we're trying to make sure that citizens, one, have their Second Amendment honored and allowed to participate in it. Because if you have to ask the government for permission, that's not a right.
So explain to the audience, maybe those who don't know, what is a constitutional carry? What does that mean?
That means you can carry concealed or open carry without having to have a license.
In the state of Texas.
Yes, sir. Yep. And we didn't have that all the way from the beginning of the foundation of Texas, the start of it.
So now no one has to go to the government and ask for permission to have a license. If they have no criminal record.
Correct. Yeah. If they're law-abiding citizens, then they can participate in that right. There's certain stipulations, like if you're a felon, which of course you're not going to be able to, or if you've been accused or charged with domestic violence, then you're not going to be allowed to carry. But outside of that, most people 21 and up right now can. So.
How are they viewing your car? In some states, I know they view your car as an extension of your house. How does Texas view your car?
Yeah, in Texas, same thing. Your car counts as an extension of your house. So even before constitutional carry, you could have that pistol in your car, and before open carry, you could have it in your car, but you couldn't have it visible, so it had to be hidden. Mm-hmm.
And so what is the laws for people like me from Tennessee coming to Texas? I mean, we have reciprocity between our two states, I'm sure.
Yeah, and that's one of the bills that we're going to be working on in the near future, is reciprocity for all states that have license to carry. So anyone from any state, we would recognize that reciprocity and they would come in. Now, being a non-resident coming into Texas, you can open carry or conceal carry while you're here.
Even right now?
Yes, sir. And I've been to other states that had open carry and constitutional carry. And also, I have my license to carry. So when I go to those states, I generally look up the rules, and then I make sure I adhere to them, but I do carry when I go there.
And, of course, the one state that, you know, is such a problem for so many people because it's in the center of the country, and it's long, is Illinois.
Yeah, yep. We used to be in the same category as Illinois. People think of Texas as this very pro-gun, pro-patriotic state, but before 2015, we were ranked with Illinois and we were of only six states that didn't allow open carry at that time.
Wow.
So, yeah. So GOA has been very active in making sure that we are the state that people already believe we are. So, yeah.
So tell me, he mentioned the fact that, hey, if you pull your gun and use it, you might go to jail.
Yep.
Are you doing any instructing and teaching through GOA and to the citizens?
So we do have a women's outreach group. Antonia, she teaches that. And I would recommend anybody listening, reach out to GOA and we can get you in contact with Antonia on that. We also, right now, we primarily for Texas GOA, we focus on the legislation. And then we have our national organization that's focused on the federal issues and a lot of Supreme Court cases. GOA was involved in the Bruin case that came up recently, and we're pushing forward on actually having our rights. So
Gun Owners of America, how are you guys doing? I mean, this is, I guess at some point your competition, if you will, would be National Rifles Association, right? NRA.
Yes, sir. We're the second largest lobbyist group.
But there's been some issues with that organization. There's been some issues with that organization, hasn't there?
Well, we as GOA don't badmouth any other gun organizations, right. And so we just stay away from that.
From
yes,
that.
Sir. Yep. Sorry, my throat's getting to you.
No problem. We need to get him some water. But you're tracking this legislation that the Biden regime is trying to put through.
Yes,
that
sir.
Would limit our
yep.
number of
yeah,
rounds in your
yeah, it's absolute insanity.
Right?
Yeah, it's insane. Those guys want us to have a socialist country where they can control everyone in this country.
Yep. Their goal is no private ownership of guns, correct?
I think that's true. Yeah, I would agree with that. Yep.
And what do you make of the ATF and all the gun registry and everything they're doing?
So we are at GOA. We believe that the ATF is unconstitutional. We support abolishing the ATF. And actually, I have my pen here, abolish the ATF. So, and you know, when we look at the Second Amendment, that's a restriction on the government. That's not a restriction on the citizen. And the ATF was created unconstitutionally, and we would like to see the ATF gone, abolished. Yeah. Just like Department of Education.
Education
not
needs to go,
yep.
Absolutely. That's
so,
unconstitutional.
You know, we believe in a federalist society. When we look at the Constitution, what's authorized in it to the federal government, they have authority over. And then the 10th Amendment says anything not within that Constitution is left up to the states. They have no authority to create an organization like that. I'm sure there's some great people in the ATF, but we're saying this organization's unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So if folks want to get involved, they just go to goa.org, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, type in gunowners.org, I believe is the correct website.
Gunowners.org.
Yes,
so what did you do before you came to Gun Owners of America?
So I was an activist since about 2011. Before that, I was in the Air Force, and I worked on intercontinental ballistic missiles.
You did?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay, my music started, so we're going to come back. I want to hear more about that.
Sounds good.
You worked on intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Yes, sir. Yep.
All right, I want to hear more about that.
All right.
My two guests, Stephen Wilford and, I've got to flip your name tag over, Wesley Verdell. Wesley Verdell is with us today. Gunowners.org, gunowners.org. And their representative who set it all up. What's her name?
Jennifer Lewis.
Jennifer Lewis, standing outside, who set this all up. We'll be right back after this break. No, you're fine.
I didn't want to.
All right, welcome back. Glad you are with us, Worldview Radio. We are here at CPAC Dallas 2022. We've had an excellent opportunity to interview a lot of people that we would not otherwise have had the interview if we didn't come here. It's an awful lot of work, I have to tell you that. The amount of equipment that we travel with, how expensive the equipment is, it always worries me because we've spent a lot of money. We've taken a lot of years to save the money to buy the equipment we buy, and then we bring it all here and it makes you nervous, but it is worth it. We get to meet people, as I said, we would have otherwise never meet, get to interview them, make great contacts, so it's very valuable to be here. And today is a very special broadcast. And of course, I followed your story, Stephen, and admired you immediately from day one, hearing your story, but never anticipated I'd get a chance to meet you, much less interview you, so it's a real honor. But also, the day I heard your story, my heart went out to you because I thought that poor guy has now gotten himself into this situation. I don't know. I didn't know what the outcome was going to be for you either. But just the thought of the emotional and traumatic situation that you were put in. And I know people make wonderful comments to you, and you deserve every one of them. But I wonder if people realize the human toll, the personal toll at the same time, because there has to be an emotional toll on this.
There absolutely is an emotional toll. That man changed my life that day. And I would like to address that, I guess, because if you're ever involved in something like this, you don't, that's not what you want.
No.
It's gonna change your life. The only difference is I chose how he changed my life. I had, you know, people said, you're gonna have to get used to a new normal. And I used to say, but I love my old normal. Can I have that back? And they would say, no, that went away. But the way it changed my life is now I'm a spokesperson for GOA. I travel the country and I talk about my story and I encourage people to be ready to, because you're your own first responder. Police try to say they're first responders. They're not first responders. And I don't mean that with any disrespect. They're second responders. And so the way my life has changed now, in contrast to where it would have been changed had I not done anything. Because if I would have stayed in my home and protected my family, nobody would know who I was. And that doesn't bother me. Nobody would have blamed me. But in the morning when you shave your face, and then look at the man in the mirror and you shave your face, you have to face that person. And I don't think that I could have lived with a man that would not have reacted.
Did you even hesitate?
I didn't, actually. It just almost became second nature, and I ran into the battle. I grabbed a rifle, I grabbed a handful of ammunition, and ran into the battle. And I did everything I could. And people also ask me, how many lives did you save? And my standard response to that is not near enough. 26 people died.
And you knew most of those.
And I knew them. I knew them. I rode motorcycles with them. My children grew up, and we didn't go to that church and attend that church, but my children went to Awana's at that church. And so I was fourth generation on the same piece of property in that community. My great-grandparents lived
there.
Went
to that church?
They went to that church sometimes. They went to a Methodist church, but they attended that church. And I remember my great-grandfather, when I was a small boy, went to that church one time, and he picked me up, and I grabbed the bell rope, and he pulled me up and down to ring the bell to bring people to church.
Of that church?
At that church.
Wow.
That's how much of a community, and that's how much it meant to me, is that's my community. You know, I may not have attended that church before, I do now, but my community is everything. And
how is the community doing now? How has it changed your community?
Well, again, we have, even during the worst of COVID, we had 200 members at the church. We're building a new community center for the youth center, where it'll have basketball hoops and and stuff indoors for kids and through the whole community.
What you need in Texas is so hot.
Well, yeah, yes. But it will be for the whole community, not just the members of the church, but for the community to enjoy.
But how has life in the whole community, in the whole town changed? Has this made people more alert? Has it made them more callous? Has it made them more sensitive, or all the above?
Well, in a small community, and we, I would like to say that we're Mayberry, USA.
Right.
It has brought us together in so many ways. And we got so many scars because of what happened. And we'll never forget what happened. But don't get me wrong there. And we'll grieve for the people that we lost.
I'm guessing you have a memorial in the new building with their pictures of
everyone?
They're
going to do a memorial, a real tasteful memorial that will have kind of the outline of the church. It'll be a metal structure, but it'll be outside. You know, it won't have a roof over it, mm-hmm. but it'll kind of mimic the shape of the church.
With the pictures.
With the pictures, it'll have a place that you can pray, that you can sit down and pray, and it'll be a beautiful memorial garden, and we're gonna do that.
Wow. Well, I just can't tell you how much we appreciate your stopping by, sharing your story. I know it has to take something out of you emotionally, if I can be so bold. I've noticed your eyes have filled up with tears a few times while I'm talking to you. It's been how many years now?
In November, it'll be 5 years.
5 years, and you still get emotional.
I still get emotional, but I will say that it's part of, I guess, my therapy, my healing process, to be able to speak about my community.
Mm-hmm. I bet your community just loves you, don't they?
Oh, my community. I love my community. You know, my great-grandfather used to take me around the community and deliver food baskets to people that were struggling in the community. Mm-hmm. And he would take us, my brother and I, as young boys, to do that. And, when I became a young father myself, and I was struggling one time, had been unemployed a little bit, there was a knock at my door. Mm. And before I even knew that I needed to ask for help, it was someone from my community delivering food baskets to me.
Wow.
It had come full circle.
Wow, full circle. GunOwnersOfAmerica.org, GunOwnersOfAmerica.org. And again, it's just been an honor to have you with us, Stephen.
Thank you. God bless.
And you as well. I wanted to talk to you about your missile defense, but I guess
yes,
another
sir.
Time. But
another time.
GunOwners.org, right?
Yes, sir.
Thanks,
thanks a lot.
Thanks for serving our country as well.
Thank you.
In the military,
and
you're still serving our country now.
Trying to
defend
do what we're supposed
Amendment.
To. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you to both of you. What an honor to have both of you here. All right, folks, we'll get this posted online. Thanks for watching. Take care.